Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Welcome along to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness, and here on Joe. Today we're looking ahead to Munster and Leinster in the Guinness Pro 14 semi-finals. Later on, Barry Murphy's going to be chatting to Reese Marshall down in UL, the Munster boys. I'm going to be chatting to John Fogarty today at Leinster, and I'm here joined by Adam Byrne, who's looking ahead to the game with me as well. So yeah, we're here in the belly of the beast, as Barry Murphy often likes to say, in the heart of Leinster rugby, and we're sitting here with Adam Byrne today, looking ahead to the Guinness Pro 14 semi-final between your Leinster and Barry's Munster, let's say. How are things? You were just showing me there before we kicked off the interview your gnarly scar there that you had from your recent operation.
Yeah, it's a long one, all right. But no, I'm just happy to have the operation done, and you know, I feel like I'm on the road to recovery now. I've started the rehab and started to load the quads, so it's feeling really good, and hopefully no hiccups, and you know, I can just get back to where I was.
And we often you know get people asking in or Twitter questions and stuff, and people asking about yourself and. You know, what's the time frame for yourself getting back? Is there, you know, like this pre-season?
Yeah, I guess running? It's normally when you get a muscle reattached, it's anywhere between 12 and 16 weeks. So hopefully I'll aim for the lower half of that 12 weeks. But I guess the main thing is just making sure it's right. You know, I guess I don't want to push it and, you know, come back too soon and make it worse. So I'll aim for the lower half and I'll work as hard as I can to get back as quick as I can. But the main focus is just get it back right.
And did it happen in, was it a training accident or was it the Glasgow game?
No, it actually happened in the Glasgow game. So I'd had a dead leg about a month before. I got a pretty big bang on that. So at the time, we were defending our line and, you know, when the forwards are picking and going, somehow I got caught up in there and kind of in a lunge position and just was trying to drive back their player. And I thought I'd got hit in my leg, but when I got up, I felt a little bit different. But I'd come on as a sub, so we didn't have any subs left. So I just thought it was a dead leg and thought I could manage it. But kind of the last few minutes of the game went on, I realised it was something pretty bad. So unfortunately, the scan showed up. It was a pretty bad tear. So got it reattached and it's looking pretty good. So yeah, looking forward to just getting stuck into the rehab and getting back.
And are you someone who, like, is there a medical term for it? Are you someone who would read up on this type of stuff, or you just kind of give me the time frame and I'll get back?
I probably would like look into things, but I tried not to. I've known from the past, you know, googling stuff definitely doesn't help. So yes. Once I got the scan, I just listened to the physios and the doctors and you know, the surgeons, the kind of key people who knew their stuff. And the surgeon did tell me he had a few pictures of when he operated inside my leg, but he hasn't sent them on yet, and I don't know if I want to see them. But no, I'm just happy it went well, and you know, it's done.
Yeah, I once got a Jake Heenan, when he was at Connacht, sent me a picture of the inside of his hand because he had got a stud through it, and it looked like somebody had put a bike chain in there to try and keep the thing together. Like, it was
I don't know if I want to see it, so I think I'm happy to just look the scar and let it heal.
Yeah. And then for yourself, you're saying you have an exam coming up. What is it you're studying at the moment? And
yeah, so the lads are calling me Van Wilder. I don't know if you've seen that movie. Yeah. The guy who seems to forever be in college. But I'm finishing off a master's in biomedical engineering.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I've two more modules to do now next year, and then I'll have it done. So looking forward to that. The end is near. But the one tomorrow, actually, funny enough, is in rehabilitation engineering. So I should know my way around that one at this stage. So hopefully it goes well.
And is there much time that you'd like spend with the students? Like, are you coming in then with the American football flinging around the back of the back row of class?
Not really. I guess in the early stages, when I was in the academy, you know, we train maybe a little bit earlier. The time frames would be a little bit different, so I'd normally cycle in and then cycle over to lectures, probably still sweaty and stuff. But no, at this stage I kind of just try, you know, look up on the work in my own time or go to the library when I get a chance or a week off or whatever. But yeah, I've dropped down through the years because I'm doing a reduced workload. So I think I'm in my eighth year now in UCD, so there's a lot of new faces in there when I go in. But yeah, no, I'm able to manage it. And look, to be honest, I enjoy having another focus outside of rugby and something to kind of keep my brain ticking over and focus on outside of rugby. So it's good. And particularly when you have an injury as well, it's another thing to, you know, kind of set goals for or aim for. So I enjoy it.
And then you're talking about cycling in. Would you kind of, you still live in the area? You still like, are you living with any of the Leinster boys?
Yeah.
Your own, the big bad world.
So I live just about like a 5 minute, 5 minute drive, 10 minute cycle away, in Clonskee with Josh van der Fleer, Peter Dooley. Used to live with Tom Daly. He's obviously moved out west to Connacht. It's been the four of us. We have two other lads in there as well, and it's been great fun. We used to live even slightly closer, but that house got sold, so we tried to stick together and we found another house. So we've had great fun. You know, we did the, I think there was an Academy series that filmed a while ago. You know, it's good crack in the house, and it's just good to have everyone's support. And you know, when someone's on an up or someone's on a low, at least we can kind of understand each other and kind of row in behind each other. So no, it's good fun. And the other two lads in the house as well, it's great to have them there as well. One lad is an entrepreneur with his own business. The other guy's working in Deloitte, and you know, he played actually Ireland under 18s rugby with us as well. So he's you know, it's good to have someone else that's not just rugby the whole time in the house. So yeah, we enjoy it and we bounce off each other pretty well.
That's good. And then you would have been close, you got a close look at van der Fleer, and I was surprised enough myself yesterday when I heard that he was back, like some superhuman feats to get back.
He's the ultimate pro, and you know, I guess it's great to be living with him as well, just to see, you know, he's obviously very disciplined, the ultimate pro in here that everyone can see, but then at home as well, you know, his diet, his sleep, everything. So he's you know, and to see him turn around, you know, a potential 12-week injury in 7 or 8 weeks is, you know, I've been picking his brains and, you know, asking him questions the whole time. So he's, he was calling himself Backman because he was going to get himself back in time. So when he's injured, he always sets up phases for himself. So this one was Backman, and he lived up to it. So he got back, I think, in 7 or 8 weeks. So you know, hopefully he'll get a run out this weekend, and I'm sure he'll do very well.
Yeah. And does that one there, like, about I suppose you guys all living together and talking about being an ultra professional as well, like, would it be handy then, like, in terms of like cooking, and you know, you have your own meals and stuff like that? Then is anybody, or do you kind of lean on one of the lads?
I think we've probably because, you know, we're all kind of, I'm in college and coming back, we normally do just cook separately, but I would definitely say the deft hand in the kitchen is Peter Dooley. He knows his way around the kitchen. When he puts a bit of time into it, he's very good. And you know, yesterday, for example, you know, I was studying all day with the exams after training, and you know, came back and he had the barbecue going, and he'd gone to the shop, got the meat and everything, and it was a touch of class by him, in fairness, to come back. And I don't know who ended up cleaning up. I scooted off to the library. But sometimes, like, you know, if it's a barbecue or something, we'll all like cook together. But normally we're just going to do our own thing and that.
And then you kind of grew up in Kildare as well, didn't you, as well? And it's kind of looking at the kind of the journey that you kind of had from there as well. I was even reading up about you as well, that a lot of kind of Ga and football there as well along the way, is like, and then rugby was kind of late enough start for you, wasn't it?
Initially we grew up in Dublin, played soccer, myself and my brother, then moved to Kildare, and kind of, I guess, Gaelic was probably the sport that I loved the most when I was younger. I loved that, and you know, my ultimate dream was just to play for the Lily Whites in Croke Park, so everything was going towards that. And then I kind of just came across rugby by chance. I think it was just a friend saying, you know, you get a, it was in school initially in ACBS, and he just said, you know, you get Wednesday afternoons off, so you know, give it a go. And once I kind of started getting into rugby, you know, I found it difficult to learn at the start, but you know, I loved it and kind of enjoyed the challenge as well. And then things just kind of, I guess, went from there. Obviously, I had to give up the Gaelic soon after that. I had to make a decision, which was really tough at the time because it was around the time of minors. And so it was really tough at the time. But, you know, I still keep in touch with a few lads on the Kildare team. Like, I was only talking to Paddy Brophy, who played AFL. as well himself. So yeah, I, you know, it's something I would love to have done, but I'm definitely glad I stuck with the rugby.
What age did you keep going with? And was the local, was Kill the local team as well?
Yeah, Kill was the local team. So, you know, we weren't normally, I'd say we probably don't do too well against, you know, the bigger towns like Naas or Selbridge, but for our age group we used to kind of punch above our weight. You know, we had a really good group of lads, like myself, my brother were playing the team. There was Shane O'Hagan, Jack Healy, just a few of the lads who were, you know, really good, all played Kildare underage. And then, yeah, I guess it was probably around 16 or 17 where I was kind of, maybe I was a year young for the minor team, was kind of maybe pushing for that, and then it was also a year young for the Leinster youth team. So I guess, you know, at that age, you know, you'd have maybe older people saying, ah, sure, you can easily play both when I was your age. You know, we go from a, you know, a rugby match to a soccer match to a Gaelic match in one day. But no, I wasn't able for that. I think I remember I had like Osgood Schladders, I think it was called. It was like lumps on my knees from growing pains, and I used to be in bits. So I tried to keep it going as long as I could, but unfortunately one of them had to give, and I chose to stick with the rugby, and I'm obviously glad I've done that, but I do miss the Gaelic.
And what's it like when you go back? Do you still get back to Kill much? Go into the Dewdrop Inn for a drink over Christmas or something?
Yeah. I head back. When I first moved up, I'd go back, you know, every chance I got. It was only like a half hour drive. You know, my mum would bring back a big bag of washing for her to do, yes. And, you know, get a few meals cooked for me, so it was nice. But, now it's a little bit, you know, the weekends are a little bit more busier. I'm trying to study up here, you know, a few other things going on. So I probably get home once every 2 weeks. And, yeah, you know, a couple of my mates, you know, are always hanging around, and one of them actually works in the Dewdrop. So, you know, cool. He might throw me out an odd pint or two when I go back. But, no, I really enjoy going back, and even to catch up with the lads. One of my good mates works in Palmerstown House Golf Club, and you know, try to go over and play a few holes with them. And yeah, it's always great to get back and, you know, try to keep in touch with the lads that I grew up with. So
myself, my dad played that course a few years ago, and I couldn't get to the 18 because I'd lost all the balls. Yeah, so many lakes tough, and stuff around there.
Yeah, I think I've walked it a few times when I was younger, but I don't think I'd be able to last now. Yeah. I'm always banking on my friend to, you know, get the keys for a buggy. So, but yeah, I don't even think I've played longer than 12 holes in the last couple of years. But no, it's a good course.
And at the weekend, then, like, so I. Did you get over to Newcastle at the weekend, or were you still like, were you part of the squad? You all flew over together, and
yeah, so it was great that you know, Leinster brought, you know, the extended squad. Obviously, there was the match day 23 in the reserves, but you know, Leinster organised for everyone else, you know, to kind of go over, and there was a function beforehand, and you know, it was great to be there right beside the subs bench and just be able to cheer on the lads, and as well also to be there and kind of, I guess, shared emotion when, you know, we came up that little bit short. So, you know, really appreciative that Leinster were able to bring us over.
And you've been in that position before, like, you know, like you've had a game, like, after the game, because I was even, like, I was standing in the mix zone, and you kind of, you have to chat to the lads, but you almost don't want to talk to them, you want to leave them be, but you have to. But is it the same for you? Are you kind of looking to kind of, do you leave the lads be, or do you have the odd word every now and then, or...? Everybody's different.
Yeah, I guess everyone's different. I guess at this stage we're, you know, we're really close friends. We're nearly, you know, have that kind of family, brother relationship. So I guess you know everyone individually. And but I think maybe I just mostly just leave the lads themselves, especially the lads who played. But yeah, when I think back to maybe a couple of years ago when we lost to Scarlets and Claremont, and their season was over. You know, I think the one thing that stuck out was just being, having to wait so long for your next game. You know, there was months, you know, in the summer before the next game. So I think the great thing is, you know, it is extremely, you know, sore at the moment, but at least, you know, we only have to wait a week before we can get back to our home stadium, the RDS, and, you know, get to play a great team like Munster. So, you know, hopefully we can put in a really good performance and come out on the right side of the result. And I'm sure the lads, that's the best thing I think you want, you know, another game as soon as you can, just to show what you can do. So,
And as you said, Munster have all the guys to get back up against. But from you, I suppose, just in that kind of position where you kind of cover the back three, I suppose Munster's threats, like, you know, if you think of you could have Haley, Earls and Conway coming up against the lads, it'll be tough at the weekend, won't it?
Yeah, you know, obviously would have been in camp, you know, a few times with Keith Earls and Andrew Conway, and, you know, they're exceptional, really good wingers. You know, I'm always probably picking Earls' brains and stuff and asking him questions. You know, reads the game very well, and obviously an incredible player for Ireland and Munster over the years. But yeah, we know the threats that they're going to bring. Mike Haley as well has come in this season, done very well. But also, you know, I'm sure the lads will back themselves, whoever we have out in the back three as well. So, you know, I'm looking forward to that contest and seeing the contest in the air as well. I'm sure it'll be a tough one. But, yeah, it's going to be a tough one, but evenly matched.
And then as the last one for me is just kind of, as you're saying, the focus now is on kind of getting yourself right and stuff like that. Hopefully, maybe if you get back in time, get into maybe like pre-World Cup camps and stuff like that as well. But are you going to give yourself a week or two off even in the middle of it all to get your head... shower, get your head washed away from it all for a week or two at least?
Yeah. So I had a holiday booked to America before I got injured. So luckily enough, I've worked it out with the physios that I can still go to America and then enjoy that and, you know, have fun over there and then come back. And it'll just be, you know, get myself right and get myself back as quick as possible. So, yeah, looking forward to both of them.
Yeah, well, good luck with it and good luck over the summer. Good luck with the exam as well.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. Cheers. Thank you.
Typical underdog. You're saying like how they ripped. I'm just thinking Last of the Mohegans style.
I was thinking Indiana Jones as well, like where your man tries to rip. I don't know why.
That's graphic for Indiana Jones. Oh yeah.
He rips the hearts.
Cover the heart.
Classic.
Indy.
Yeah, he didn't.
He didn't. Connacht didn't cover their hearts.
No, they didn't. They should have covered their hearts.
Yeah.
Should have listened to the advice of Short Rod.
It's Short Rod, is it?
Yeah.
Connacht didn't have a Short Rod.
No.
That was it. They had no one to say to cover their heart.
Rhys Marshall, you're 20,000 kilometres from your home just north at the New Plymouth in New Zealand. And you've just extended your stay at Munster till 2020, at least. You've been described as an integral part of the Munster squad by a few people. But before we get into that, I want to talk to you about your rugby life in New Zealand, where it started. For us over here, we look at all New Zealanders and imagine that every kid, every teenager aspires to be an All Black. Was that the way it was for you?
Yeah. So growing up, two older sisters, both played rugby. Rugby's kind of in the genes. Granddad played it, I played it. Dad and my brother and my granddad all played provincial level rugby. So it was always kind of, it was the four-year-old's dream to be an All Black, like you say. And growing up on the farm, we had the local club and I'd played... played rugby, like I said, since I was four, and so Dad was the coach, and it's just that's how it panned out.
All the way up, he coached, followed your teams all the way up to.
So he was actually coaching the seniors, in a rival club, so our local club. So he was coaching across the bridge, pretty much, where he was brought up and where he was raised. So I played for a rival club when I was little. And then from there, into just school stuff. Dad was still coaching away, and then seventh form, last year of school, I got into the first 15, I got named as captain. So Dad threw in the old coaching gig just to kind of come and watch my games, which was pretty cool. He'd been coaching, he retired young enough. They don't have shoulder surgeons like they used to, so he dislocated it twice, and they kind of said to him, "Oh, you can keep playing rugby, you can be a farmer." So he went farming.
Farming was the route for him.
Yeah. And
did you think farming would be the route for you, or did you have an eye on professional rugby?
Yeah, so after school, things kind of didn't pan out. I wasn't kind of on a whole lot of radars or anything like this, as far as New Zealand schools or New Zealand academies or anything like that. So I was like, my other love and life's farming. So I went over to the other side of the country, just kind of went to what worked out to be probably the best decision I made was I went working for 2 years and it kind of, I was playing just under 20s rugby just for the local club, and I was loving my code and being an 18 year old boy kind of thing, and it was good. We were working hard. I was 88-ish kilos dripping wet, so riding a horse every day, kind of in my element.
So I was on the farm every day, 6 o'clock in the morning job, all day, working, no food. Is that what you mean when you said you were 80 kgs?
No, I would still eat, but you kind of, work was prioritised over food. So you kind of go out and you come back and you still got a lunchbox full of food.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, oh, you have that for dinner. But no, that's just how it was for the first 12 months anyway. And then I got into the Hawke's Bay under 20s team and went away and played all right and played well, and then New Zealand 20s for the following year got in touch and said they were interested in giving me a crack. So
what was that like? You went, so you came,
I did,
having not gone through any academies?
I did the full circle. So I hadn't been training, I hadn't been doing anything, I'd just been working on the farm. And so I got there was a gym on the farm just with a whole lot of old kettlebells and stuff, so we lined those up and got all the machines working again. And so I had a good mate who did it with me. So I went from one extreme to the other, from not training to training full time. Eating, and like I said, food wasn't prioritised, but then I had to put weight on because I turned up to the first camp. And the coach stood me up and he kind of said, well, how do you expect to make this team? And I took it really personally, like he's having this is in front of the whole squad.
Right.
And so I just kind of took it so personally, so I went away and became a bit of a fanatic. So I was eating probably 6 or 7 meals a day in the saddle, kind of on my horse. And so I'd go to bed full, and I'd wake up full. It was a nightmare. It was, but we weren't paid a hell of a lot. So every dollar I had went from going into booze and kind of into food and doing things right. So since then I haven't really been able to eat tuna. It's not really.
You were stuffing into yourself.
I just
so
literally 3 of those a day, fingers and all, tin tuna, but no, that was me. And so so I'd work all day, go to training, come back and go to the gym because that was the only time I could have time. So I was burning the candle at both ends, and that kind of, I learned a pretty tough lesson about a couple of weeks out from the first trial. I got diagnosed with blood poisoning and I was just run down, and so I got septicemia.
Jesus.
Yeah, so I had exhaustion, so everything kind of went into shutdown, which was a bit scary.
Wow.
So that was, so that was 2 weeks in hospital, and I came out and I was 86 kilos, and I just remember I was the most upset I'd been ever.
Undone all the work
undone
that everything you put in.
And so that got me, and so then I went along to the 20s trials, and not being involved in the first trial because I just got out of hospital was kind of a kick in the teeth. They wouldn't let me do much. And so that was fine. And so the next trial, I was gearing up for it. I was back into the mode, kind of learned a lesson. And then I get a phone call. It's, Reese, where are you? The trials are kind of, everything's underway. I was thinking, So I hopped in my 92 Ford Mondeo, and
I'm disappointed you didn't have the horse.
I turned up and I had my knife belt on. I'd been killing sheep all day. I had my knife belt on, had my swan dry on, and I was covered in blood. And I had my rucksack, because that's all I had. I literally ran into my room and I had an old army rucksack, and I literally filled it up, flew. And I got there and I hopped out of the car and I heard a hissing, and I was like, I'll let it be fine. So I shot in anyway. It was a 4-day trial. I'd missed the first 2 days. So they had a 2-day scrum session and with Chrono. And that pissed me off. So now I'm in there, I'm pissed off. And so I trained unbelievably well. I played incredibly well for me anyway, because I was so angry that no one had thought to give me a call. A couple of hours into the session, they decided to call me after the... So, but that's what happens when you're not in the mix. You're not in the circle.
Loop.
Yeah.
So you weren't in the loop even with other players, basically.
I didn't know anyone.
Okay.
I'd kind of met a few guys through Hurricane schools and stuff at the trials, but I didn't know anyone.
They weren't your mates?
No, I kind of walked in there and I was kind of no one knew who I was, and I didn't really know any of them. And so, so that was the second trial, and I actually went really, really well. And Then the final trial, the number one hooker didn't turn up with a broken foot. So here's
happy
a
days.
Yeah, yeah. I still remember getting my name getting called out, and it just
couldn't believe it. Really.
And so that was basically my 20s run, kind of from not having any gym experience or anything, and my gym technique still gets hounded because I'm horrendous.
Yeah.
I just kind of I give it a go kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
that's inspiring to think, you know, that even like if you were a father and you had a young lad, you'd almost want him to go through through that more route rather than the usual academy. Things are kind of handed to you a little bit. I know that's not the case for all players, but for a young man to go in and learn the discipline at 18 years of age,
getting out of bed
at 5 o'clock in the morning and have to work.
And not turning up hungover on a Monday or...
Yeah, and still having to do your day work and train and play and still have to do everything that everyone else does.
Yeah.
That must have been something, there must be still something that you draw on.
Yeah, I it was an unbelievable time for me. Like you say, you learn a lot of life lessons pretty quick. One of them was we were out the back. We were lambing ewes, and the hut burnt. Well, we half burnt the hut down. And so instead of we couldn't get in touch with anyone back, and we're probably 2 hours ride from anywhere. So one of the boys stayed back and fixed the hut while we had to pick up his work, because we all had jobs to do. Mm. And so literally there was no complaining, there was no, oh, you left the candle too close to the ceiling kind of thing and it's your fault. It was, listen, I'll stay back here, I'll fix everything up. You guys just take my workload. So we went out and did his jobs for him, and he stayed at home, fixed the place up, sorted dinner kind of thing.
Mm.
And it was those things. But then it's also, it was cleaning the toilets. It was killing sheep and getting rid of the ends and using all of them. Nothing was wasted on the farm because we would have had probably 40 or 50 dogs. We would have had 20 or 30 horses, all that rely on kind of all the sheep and everything. But yeah, these dogs, you had to feed them every night, and they are your best mates because you rely on them day in, day out. And some of them run their paws off. You come back from work and like you say, to learn those life lessons, the fact that guys around you kind of have your back when you need. Like I had horrible days where I just made absolute errors, and it makes me laugh. Like I've had absolute fuck ups really. and so then all the sheep go in the wrong direction, and you can't sit there and sit on your laurels. You're on your horse and you're gone. There's no thought about it, there's no it's your fault, right.
Yeah.
And then I was coming across the valley and I saw my mate coming down the other side full noise on his horse, because he saw, so they broke down, and if they got away they would have been gone. And so that would have just been a nightmare. But without talking to him, without yelling at him, without anything, he was on his bike. And I love the fact that you can compare that to a team like that I'm playing with now, or I've played with in the past.
Yeah.
Guys are kind of, when the chips are down, you see who turns up. And so that's what I kind of, especially walking into a Super Rugby team like the Chiefs, you're surrounded by blokes like Liam Messam and Cruden and Sam Kane and all these kind of blokes. And
you were brought in there 20 years of age, right?
Yeah, and it's these Craig Clarks and all these blokes who kind of, they're not superheroes, they're not any different to anyone else, and you're Richard McCaws and things. They're just normal blokes, but they're willing to kind of do extraordinary things.
Yeah.
So that was my biggest taking, especially from going through that route, is they're just normal blokes. And a lot of people just spend a lot of time idolising and making them so important that they can't do any wrong, but 9 times out of 10 they are just, even the big scary ones like Brodie Retallick are just lads. And
they made you very welcome then with the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So talk to us about the Chiefs then, how did that pan out for you?
So I rolled into, and this is probably the big letdown of not doing the academy and stuff, I rolled into that with the idea that I'd just keep playing rugby.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it, I really enjoyed it, and I loved playing a game for a living, and so I got an opportunity to do it. And so I took it by bull by two horns and kind of had a phenomenal first year, and played my first game, and both the hookers were out, and I played 80 minutes, and I loved every minute of it. And then one thing I wasn't used to was kind of the training schedules, and so I'd... I'd go out for a few beers kind of thing, as I'd do on the farm on a Saturday night after the game. And then Sunday there'd be another couple of beers, so I'd go another couple of beers. And you soon learn in a professional environment that you can't be doing that every weekend. And so I found that out the hard way. I took a lot of learnings from that first year. And then especially in my second year, my throwing failed a bit. And so I didn't know how to deal with that. I didn't know how I could turn that around. So all I did was I dove in. I did more and more and more reps, being that the more I do, the better I get.
Yeah.
And I never knew anything different. And that's kind of how I've got through everything. And so I literally dove into it and was doing, 2,500, 3,000 throws a week. And it was, again, I thought that I was getting better, but all I was doing was digging myself a massive hole.
Yeah.
And so that didn't help with my rugby. And so then I started seeing everything in a different light, my attack, my defense, everything. And so all I was doing was doing extra, doing more. And so I wasn't kind of prepped enough to go, I need a bit of help. So I had no idea what I was doing with my throwing. I had no idea what I was doing with my tackling. I was just like, if I do more, I'll get better. And I actually taught myself really bad habits.
Bad habits.
And so that takes a little while to get rid of, and they're still not gone. And no different to the gym. I just do more gym, so I wouldn't tell the trainer. I'd just go off and do extra gym, or I'd go do extra running. And then when you start getting injuries and niggles, they're like, well, where's this coming from? And the fact you haven't told them you'd gone and played touch or tag on a Wednesday kind of thing, and thought nothing of it because you're doing extra.
And this is while you're playing Super 14.
Yeah. Or you go rowing. I'd go down and just hop on the rower, and I'd turn out my back would be lynched. And they're like, what's going on here? I'm like, oh, I'm not sure. But it's because I was worried that if I didn't do enough, I'd be kind of left behind or forgotten.
Is that how it came to an end then? Did you do yourself out of a contract with them?
Yeah. So my throwing was one thing that kind of really let me down. And so I went away and got a coach, got a psychologist, got a few people on board, because it's amazing how it's actually the support network that keeps you kind of afloat when everything hits the wall. And so I got through that and had two phenomenal ITM Cup seasons. As far as my throwing went, that was probably one of my proudest moments. And the Chiefs turn around and go, oh, listen, you know, we've got this young fella coming through. We want to give him a contract. Would you mind taking a wider training? And I said, shit, not at all. No bother. So when I did that, and then they came back to me and said, oh, actually, listen, it's going to be an injury cover. So still in for the time. But I wouldn't have been part of the squad, So after a few years up there, that kind of bit me. And then my province came back and said, we're going to offer you this amount. And not to say that I'd play rugby for the money. I don't at all. I do it because I love it. But for your home province to come and do that, it's a bit of a kick in the head. And I know it's not a financial game, but it's, as you'd understand, it's where you grow up. It's kind of, and so then I thought, bugger it, I'm just going to take it. And if the injury cover is for 3 weeks, it's for 3 weeks. And then I'll just go back on the farm and work on the farm and play for Taranaki. And that was my plan. And then Russie Rasmus called me. And so I had a conversation with Montpellier and one other club over there, and a couple of clubs around the place. And I was like, I'm not really that interested. Don't really know much about them. Don't really know a lot about European rugby. And then Russie called me, and I had no idea where he was coaching, and I had no idea who he was. I knew who he was, but I didn't realise he was in a coaching role. And he said, I'm at Munster Rugby. And I kind of sat there, and he said, oh, we're interested in signing you. And I was thinking, shit, like, this must be an injury cover thing. And he's like, no, we're interested to get the RFU on board as well and bring you over as kind of going forward, would be interested in you. And I was thinking, where's this come from? Like, where has he seen me play? Like, so that was about the time my granddad became quite ill, and he was always a Munster man. Ever since Munster gave the All Blacks a hiding, it's always been a legend at home anyway.
Really? So, I was going to ask you that. I was like, what are the thoughts of Munster back home?
Yeah. So my family being absolute rugby heads.
Yeah. So that still stings.
Still stings, yeah. So it takes a bit of settling. Granddad, so he was on board with the fact that I was staying in Taranaki, and and he was happy I was on the farm. But then I went and told him that, because I told him that there'd been other offers, and he was kind of like, oh. I went and told him that, and he said, you can't not do it.
Okay.
So I was like, well, I suppose if Granddad says I have to do it, I kind of have to do it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
That's a serious seal of approval.
Yeah, right? Especially for me. Back in the day, he played professional rugby before it was professional rugby.
Yeah.
So he was working full time, and kind of his old fella was on the farm. No time for sport when you're on the farm, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Granddad would travel a mile to get to play footy, kind of thing, to play rugby. And then he played 5 caps for Taranaki, and he never looked back. He loved every minute of it. And so for me, to get his seal of approval was just like, yeah.
Brilliant.
Gone.
Okay, so you packed your bags.
Yeah.
That was it.
Granddad passed away about 3 weeks later.
Oh, man, I'm sorry. Jesus.
But Nat, Dad and I get up, a couple of whiskies in the airport for him and on the plane. So.
Amazing.
And then I flew in on the Monday, played on the Friday against Ospreys. And then the following week played the Māori All Blacks and came off the bench. So we got down to Cork, full house in Cork, and that was crazy to get down there and experience that. Because in New Zealand there's no singing, there's no nothing.
Mm.
And to get down there and experience that, you turn around, you got the Māori All Blacks coming the next week.
Wow.
I was kind of in awe for a long time, so.
Yeah, I think that was perfect timing when you got to see Limerick and growing up here. We were always obsessed with the All Blacks from, like, as a kid. For me, it was always, 1978 obviously was probably the reason for that. But because New Zealand rugby was, the level was so much above everyone else in the world. And then the history of players coming here to play as well from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Ian Jones, do you remember Ian Jones? Did you know he played for?
No.
He came here and played for? He's probably the only other Chiefs player,
I
think. Would he?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, he played for Old Crescent in Limerick for a year. In 1992, he was an All Black.
Yeah.
he decided to come over, take a year out, come over and played for Old Crescent across town.
Yeah.
I remember going meeting him on a Saturday morning. My dad was like, do you want to go meet Ian Jones? And I was like, I was only 10. I was like, absolutely. I went over and he was enormous. Saw him a rugby ball and stuff. But he came here and played for a year and then went back and played for the All Blacks for the following World Cup.
Those are the good old days.
Yeah. Incredible, man, where you could do that.
Yeah.
I remember hearing a story where he came here. He was then on holidays the following year after playing a season with the All Blacks, and he stopped in Limerick for a few days, and his club, Crescent, were playing a thirds quarter final.
Yeah.
And they asked him to jump on the bench to play just in case they needed him. And he was like, yeah, sure, I love this. Like, so casual back then, you could jump on the bench. So he jumps on the bench, and they were winning at halftime. They're playing against Thomond, Keith Earls' old club. And they brought him on at halftime, and the Thomond boys upped the game so much because he came on that they beat the shit out of them.
Pummeled them,
And they were all taking his autograph after the game, like all the other players.
Yeah.
And then you'd Rhys Ellison, Maffs, Doug Howlett, Rua Tupoki, obviously Tyler and
Christian Cullen. Yeah.
I mean,
like that to come, like you look at the kind of the and then the Francis Sileys, like you say, the Tyler Blindells, the Albie Mathiesons, the Kiwis who kind of come over here all, and then coming over, I was thinking about it, I was like, I hope there's not too much pressure on me, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was like, I hope they're not expecting me to turn up and be this phenomenal Dougie Howlett finisher. Me and my old man laughed about it. He's like, well, they haven't signed a Dougie Howlett, that's for sure. And I was like, that's fair.
Probably the first hooker we've signed, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd say so.
That's some entrance, man. And I suppose then, when you say you'd had so much trouble with your throwing and stuff, how's it been working with Fla for the last couple of years?
Class.
Has it?
So I kind of got my end of the old mental side of it sorted, and that was probably half the battle, like they say, and kind of got my idea of what I needed to do. And then, you get alongside a guy like Fla, and he's just always there to catch a ball, and he's always there for a little pointer. He won't change everything you're doing at all. So that, for me, is perfect. I didn't need a guy coming in and teaching me how to throw again, and he wasn't, so. But he's currently doing a little bicep session over there at the moment.
For usual.
Yeah, he's so prepping. He's prepping before he gets in here.
We're here in the Monster Gym, and Keith Earls and Flower. K Keith Earls just said he can't believe that Reeves had a saddle for his horse. You yeah. didn't see that in my Ross.
No. And he had a bit of passion in the occasional roundabout.
Yeah. Have you ever gone out riding horses with him?
No.
I heard Donegal Ryan's dad's been looking after you a little bit, is he?
Yeah. So I've been up to Nina a few bit, just doing farm discussion groups and stuff. So okay. We've had some hilarious days out there in class.
Really?
Just kind of seeing the contrast between New Zealand farmers and Irish farmers.
Yeah.
Everything that's different, but everything that's exactly the same.
Yeah.
So that's what I enjoy. So my missus is a vet. And so we're kind of in that circle anyway. Mm. So, I love getting out and just getting amongst them, seeing what they're up to.
Cool.
So currently doing a soils paper. So going just dirt paper, really, for university. So I'm going around collecting samples and stuff. And they're just hilarious. Like, you go in there and you have to meet grandma and granddad and you have to stay for a cuppa. And then it's 11:30 and you're thinking, sheepers, these people have got to go to bed. And I'm sitting there and it's my third slice of cake and fourth cup of tea, and I'm just like, oh guys, it's been awesome. Like, yeah, and but they
leave with your bags of dirt.
But literally, they don't know that I play rugby, and I don't emphasise that. But I'm just again a Kiwi and kind of in Limerick and an island, and so I go out there and I'm digging holes, and they see the flashlight come up one morning, and they're like, who's that? I'm like, oh, it's Reece. I have to get another sample. I called ahead. And they're like, get off my lawn. I was like, listen.
Not wearing any shoes. Not wearing any shoes. They're out of like a typical Kiwi.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had every Kiwi, I reckon, that came to Limerick for the 80s and 90s ended up on our sitting room floor, man, or our couch for some reason. My dad just had an obsession with it, so we would always have them. But it was the best way to grow up, man.
It's amazing.
Because there's so much similarities, right, between the two.
So much.
Cultures.
And the fact that there's 4 million people, kind of, I think that's half of it. Like, I know a lot of Irishmen, they're very, 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 like, they're good to open the door and have a pint with you. But they're also good if you just need a yarn or if you just want a cup of tea.
Mm.
And that's no different to at home. So I've met a lot of people here who are more than willing to help me out, and they wouldn't even bat an eyelid. And 9 times out of 10, they don't know that I play for Munster. Mm. And whether that's, so I went out and got a couple of things engraved a couple of weeks ago, just a couple of little toys for the boys that are having babies. And your man's just like, so we're sitting there, I was sitting there for about 4 hours, just chewing the fat with him, and kind of, he gave me a couple of these massive plaques of wood, and they're beautiful bog wood. All done up. So I do a lot of shooting, so I've got a lot of stag heads and stuff, and so these are $150-$200 worth of wood. Like, there's so much, because I used to do them, I know how much work has to go into them. And he's like, man, just keep them. So I called him up on the weekend. I was like, hey, any chance you're looking for a couple of rugby tickets for what? I'm like, well, the quarterfinal's on. So he lives in Ennis, and he's a GAA till he goes, right. What do you mean? Ah, fuck, no. You'll be fine.
Idea.
Yeah, no idea. Not an inkling of a clue.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And then I went out there. I was shot out there the other day, and I was just like, you know, pulled up in a Munster car. He's like, what are you doing in that? I'm like, oh, I'm playing with him. He's like, oh, yeah. And kind of didn't make anything of it. That's what I love about it. And it's just hilarious. Yeah, what quarterfinal? I was like, oh, jeepers. He's 30 minutes up the road. And every time I go out there, he's so thankful. Thanks for coming out. Like, thanks for coming. Yeah. And it's like, man, it's only half an hour. But Ireland's hilarious because it's so small. Yeah. Not used to kind of driving there.
It's true. Yeah, we think an hour to do it.
Oh,
an hour and a half the distance.
It's a big job.
Yeah.
And me and the missus are talking about it. We used to drive 2.5 hours just to kind of shoot home for the night.
Right.
And that was you'd never think about it. Now I'm thinking about it going home in June, going home to winter. It's like, oh, we have to drive from here to here. And I'm like, oh, it's a long way. We're stopping off on the way kind of thing.
Well, it's safe to say so. You're happy enough in Ireland.
And, yeah.
Would you have your sights on potentially playing international rugby? Is that something you...
Yeah, that's... goal? Yeah, I don't know. I came over here, and everyone was talking about it then, and people haven't stopped talking about it. And I don't know, for me, one step at a time.
Yeah.
And now it's coming up real quick, and the missus is the same. She's like, well, we've got to make a bloody plan. I'm like, yeah, but I'd much rather just win months or something.
Absolutely.
And kind of tick this year off, and then kind
There's
of
no point
be done though, with it. Yeah, be done with it, go home. Home for a month, and then by the time I get back over here and pre-season's done, everyone will be in World Cup mode, so no one will be none the wiser. Mm. So, and then after that, I suppose I have to make a bloody decision.
And before, I suppose, you head home, and before you make those decisions, you still have to finish out the season here.
Exactly.
And no better way to do it than a semi-final against Leinster in the RDS.
Exactly like last year. One measly point. It can be the biggest and the smallest margins. But we saw on the weekend, we were talking about it before, I just about had a heart attack those last 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And you got Benetton, who are playing unbelievably well, and the boys who are just a pace, couple of percent off the pace, and they were made look silly. And I was sitting there and I was like thinking, if that drop goal goes off, I'd be the angriest person, because I couldn't help. I was sitting there on the sideline, and that's the worst feeling in the world, is you can't go in there and give your mates a hand.
Yeah.
You're sitting there and you just say, oh. But RDS, Leinster, bring it on. I've had the opportunity to play them a few times now, and it's...
Yeah, after what happened at Christmas, I think there was a lot of passion overspilling there, so we might have a little bit more of that.
Yeah, I was red raw, just throat was gone. Again, I wasn't in the mix, so I was up the back, and I was just into them.
And
it's hilarious. You play James Lowe and you play Jamison, like good mates of mine, but...
Yeah.
Like, all due respect, like, they just, when they put that blue jersey on, they just, there's something about them. But no, that's kind of why you play it. You do it, you play the game to get these derbies.
Yeah.
And Leinster are a phenomenal side. And as we saw on the weekend, we can be an average side against the Benetton team, who are playing very well. But everyone has their days. And I'm just really looking forward to hopefully being in the mix this weekend. And just climbing into them, because it's going to be, it's going to be no love lost anyway.
Absolutely. Well, we're lucky to have you in the side, man. Yeah. So thanks so much for talking to us.
Beautiful.
Bruce Marshall.
I just felt when I got here, a lot of those Irish internationals, no one really pushed their buttons, and I always push people's buttons, whether it's for the good or the bad, and I wanted to go for the big dog first up, and I got a good reaction out of it, you know, but he's always the winner at the end of the day.
Like when you arrive in prison and you take on the big guy.
They don't go for the crazy dude, you know, if you attack him. But I mean, he really put it to me when he hit that drop goal against France, you know. We're at the pub and we almost brought the roof down, so he's a very, very good player.
We're here with John Fogarty, fresh off the pitch at Leinster. And I was actually saying, I was surprised that I haven't been at the game at the weekend over at St. James's Park. I just thought you boys would just take until Friday off and just kind of get back down. But you were saying you're in reviewing the game already on Monday then as well.
Yeah. That sometimes you don't want to. You want to stay in the house and hide. But
yeah.
I think the best way to get over things is to deal with what's in front of you. And that's what we did on Monday yesterday. So, yeah, we came in and... We met as a group of coaches and discussed everything from selection to game day management and so on. And then we talked, then we met with the players and reviewed the game. And it's difficult because it's so close and you were there. So, you know, the emotion of it all, like the support we had was just immense. So for us to have that much support, it shocked us all, I think, when we were over there.
Yeah, it was incredible, yeah.
Yeah, and we're gutted, you know, for lots of reasons, but... A lot of it is to do with, you know, we had so much support.
Yeah, it was like, because I was said, like, we do the show with like Barry, who's Munster, and Andrew Trimble, who's Ulster, and we call Leinster the Lannisters as well, and they have everything going for them. So they weren't too disappointed. They were even talking about wearing Saracen's gear on the show when they did it on Sunday.
Were they?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Lads.
I just told them I couldn't get the, there was nothing on sale. I couldn't get it. I couldn't get my hands on it.
Good.
But just from being there, like, you know, even they were kind of just saying, it's like it's clear to them that like the two best sides in Europe as well, and like it's I was talking to Jack Conan after the game, and I was saying it's hard to kind of say it to a player, but it's like it must be exciting in a way, because you'll surely meet this side again, like, you know, it's if you guys both, you know, keep the foot on the floor next season, there could be another collision that we could all look forward to at least next
season. We would hope so. I mean, that would be our plan, to be able to have days like that at the end of the season, and you know we'll I won't be there, but next year they'll plan that way and try and create something good in the season and get ourselves in another final. That's why Monday was so important, because the learnings you take from this kind of a game, and not just the guys that played, but the entire squad, you know, things change. There's players in and out every season, and we get these new players popping up. So the learning from that game is huge for us. You know, in the small moments that we didn't quite get it, why didn't we, and what can we do better? And that's what this week is about, really. And but really quickly, because we've got a front up now against Munster on Saturday, which is pretty exciting, to be honest.
That's what I was saying. I was trying to talk to one of the lads in the office earlier. I was saying, like, what happens when you've just, you know, you're Spider-Man and you've taken on the Green Goblin or something like that, like I said, and Sandman or something like that is waiting for you up the road, or like, you know, it's, there's another kind of thing to get you, kind of
fight,
like,
scrap.
Another big scrap, and you know, Munster will kind of, they might see that you guys are wounded as well, like, and we have to kind of, you know, press the knife in here as well.
Look, there's no doubt that they're gonna try and take advantage of anything they can, and you know, we'd be the same, I suppose. You know, that's the nature of it. It's pretty cruel, you know, the sport is you got to move on. The good thing about it with the lads is that, you know, that's been the nature of it for the last couple of seasons. We've had to have finals or semi-finals. We lose semi-finals, we've got to go into a Pro 14 semi-final and try and get through that. And that's been the nature of it for the last number of years. So they're getting better and better at digesting what happens at the weekend, whether you win big or in last weekend's case, we lose big, you know, digesting it all. They're getting there, slowly but surely.
And like, from, I think I was in row B, so I was pretty close to the action, but like, it's just, it was absolutely, like, you know, a brutal game of rugby, and like, so many of them are when you get to the highest level as well. But as a coach, what are you thinking when you're looking at some of this stuff? Like, you know, it's like a red wall that you're up against as well, and kind of...
Yeah, like, so we all have our areas that we coach in. So for me, I'm looking, when we're carrying into that red wall, I'm looking at carry type and what we're doing at the ruck. And so we're looking at our bits, and we're very much switched on. In that last 10, it's 20-10, we have 10 minutes left. And that's probably their most dominant part of the game, when they're ahead and they're just stopping us, and they're keeping us in our own half, and, you know, we eventually get turned over.
Yeah.
At that stage, you're just like, we're dust here, you know, we're done. But for huge portions of that game, for 60 minutes as a coach, even the little things that happen in either side of half time, you're still kind of feeling quite good about how the team is moving through the game. So that first 60 minutes, we're going quite well. There's opportunities that the lads wanted to take either side of half time, didn't happen. And then there was some calls that didn't quite happen. As a coaches, we still felt it was 10 all. We need to get ourselves in a nice position and let's smash this red wall down. There's belief that we can, and it didn't happen. But small things.
There was, I suppose, let's go back then, or let's even from your own time here at Leinster as well, of like maybe a slightly brighter kind of memory for yourself or something to look back on. I remember chatting to Emmett Farrell here a few years ago. He was talking about doing the video analysis and when a move kind of comes off in a game, or when a set play comes off. And he was talking about a line-out move they did against Biarritz, where they split the middle of them. And I think Jamie Heaslip carried through the middle of a line-out. And he was saying that's something they had spotted, that they drifted.
Yeah, right.
Is there a moment like that, in your job, where you kind of, is there something that you spotted and it works? Is there anything that comes
there
to
is.
Mind?
If we catch, like saying in the scrum, if we have a certain plan and we want to catch someone out, we get it done. There's always that little same with line out. If at the very start of the game, you know, Leo scouted quite well and we caught them, and they were penalised at the very, very start of the game. They're nice moments, but there's so much more to it. Emmett's a very selfish kind of person, so he's always he's always thinking of himself. So we're more thinking of the lads than ourselves, I think, when we're out there coaching.
I was going to think of, if there is something that worked, like, who do you turn to? Who's the other person in the room or the coach's box that knows that you were the one who did that? Like,
Leo, I probably want to go, that was great, but if I did that, he'd probably shut up.
I think actually you were on the sideline, weren't you? You're the one who's on to Leo there, because I think I saw that in the first half. So he's the one, every now and then he'll just kind of, are you his voice then down on the pitch sometimes?
So I message forwards, and sometimes there's not a whole lot to say, you know. Sometimes you go out with a message and they already have it. You know, they could just be like, we got it. Other times they need a little bit of energy, or but a lot of the time it's just more confirming what's already happening out there, and that's it. Leo will message me, I message the forwards, Charlie will message back through Stuart. So that's how it runs.
And then, like, with your own kind of, you know, journey, and you're moving on to Ireland then after World Cup as well, but could you ever have seen that coming? You know, you had to retire kind of like concussion related as well. Like, could you ever look back to that moment where you finished up, and was there ever a moment you thought you might be actually finished with rugby, you might have to move on to something else?
I didn't. So I always wanted to stay involved in rugby. So I was coaching all the way along. So as a player, as a player when I was in Galway in Connacht, I was coaching under 16s and under 18s just to coach. Mm. And then when I came to Dublin, I wanted to get involved in coaching, and I coached J1s out in De La Salle Parmesan, and then coached some of the senior side for a while, and then went on to coach with Belba. So I always wanted to be involved in coaching. Mm-hmm. I'd finished a business sports management course in Waterford when I was there, and then when I came to Dublin, I did a sports management masters, and again I wanted to again stay involved in some way, and it was just about perfect, the timing of it, to get involved with the academy. Developing young players as an EPDO was awesome. So that was just perfect. But there was a few months where I was sick of rugby and I was depressed, thinking of myself and thinking, oh, I should be still playing and all that stuff. But that goes away quite quickly. And then you're kind of going, oh, quite lucky to actually have done that.
Yeah.
And move on now. And I was lucky to get involved with Leinster in the academy set up. And it's sort of gone from there. I was desperate. I remember thinking after I'd finished, I really wanted to get back into the middle of the RDS. And I didn't quite know how.
Leo the like, Lion or something.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Dress me up. But I was kind of, how can I get back involved with this? And then once I started to get back involved with Leinster, instantly you're thinking, is there any way I can get back involved with Ireland? And so I'm not going to say there was a perfect plan put in place, but in my mind, I always wanted to get back. To the professional setup, and you know, be involved at some level, and start off with development, and it ended up with the coaching thing. So hopefully, I can drag this out for another few years.
I often talk about that in my career as well. Like, exactly. Still doing it, still getting away. Yeah. Somebody's paying me. There is a thing as well where, like as you said, like starting off with the academy. Is there a player or two that you've almost had the journey with that started around the same
quite
time?
Quite a few. So the Byrne brothers are there. Jack Conan's there. Tyke Furlong, he was in the academy when I arrived there, so we've probably knocked about with each other, all those players. I would have seen Ross Maloney when he was, you know, 16 17, James Ryan, all pretty much all the young guys when I was involved in the academy. They're all kind of bubbling away through, you know. The schools do such a great job of, you know, delivering these young lads to I mean, I was a mess leaving school. I went to college and I was bumbling along, but how together they are in their minds around how they need to act as a professional rugby player when they're in here is phenomenal. And when they come in the door first, you know, there's a few wrinkles need to be ironed out, but they're an absolute pleasure to work with, you know. So those guys that I mentioned, James Tracy, all those guys. Working with them over the last, you know, what is it now, 6, 7, 8 years, it's mad to watch it, you know. It's crazy to watch it all come through, you know, that they're, you're in admiration. Like I've forgotten that I played rugby. Like when I watch the game now, I'm like, Jesus.
Fair
play to them. And when I watch them pitch up, get through reviews, you know, and pitch up again next week, I'm kind of going, I'm in total admiration of what they do, you know. It's tough.
I actually, out of all them, I suppose, well, there's so many good players you mentioned there, but I remember just having seen James and that brilliant Michaels team that he was part of. And it's funny when lads stick out, like, you're like, this guy's going to be one to watch. Freak. As well. Like, is he someone that, like...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Andrew Porter, I dropped Andrew Porter when he was 17 or 18. And I still have his little face in my mind, and he's turned into another beast, and I've seen him come through. But with JR, it hits you real quick. You're kind of going, Jesus. First of all, physically, he's designed for the game. But then once you get to know him and how he actually processes all his bits, how driven he is, scary stuff. Like I said, when I left school, I was just like, how much crack can I have? You know what I mean? Crack is in fun. So yeah, that was my approach. You know, we'll have some crack here, and you know, different time, obviously, drink beers and play a bit of rugby and whatever. But these lads are different gravy.
Yeah, aren't they? You were talking about that. Like the goal maybe when you were starting was, you know, maybe not kind of written down on paper, but Ireland as well. So how good did it feel? How did it, was it Andy gave you a shout, or was it catch you at a game one day, or like?
Damien Sifor would have made contact first.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We went and met with Andy, and it was, yeah, it was again something that I felt like I'm starting to move towards. So you know, so much of that has to do with the group that are here, and I'm conscious of that as well. Like, so you know, this group going so well gives me an opportunity to start to put myself out there as well. So yeah, I guess I was in my mind, I was starting to think this is something I want to move towards. And I'm working with a good group of players and felt that I could add value, and that's what I was thinking in my mind. And then when you get a phone call, it's mad. Yeah,
yeah.
I rang my missus straight away and was like, Nisifor wants to meet me, you know, about I don't know what, but I'm hoping it's for this job.
Yeah. And travel tips.
Yeah.
For
Cork. Exactly. But yeah, it's been crazy. Yeah, I haven't probably thought about it an awful lot because this part of the season is so, it fills your mind up so much with what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
That every now and again I stop and go, oh my God, I have to, you know, this is all going to finish in 2 weeks and I need to plan for the next part now. And probably still haven't gone there fully in my head, but in the moments that I do, it's I'm pretty chuffed, you know. It's something that my family is really, really proud of, and I'm proud of as well, you know. So it's great.
Well, what is it? Well, look, finish then by looking ahead to this Munster game then at the weekend. And yeah, fittingly, it's in the RDS, and it's not only for yourself, it's like Sean O'Brien, Jack McGrath.
Yeah, Noli.
A few good few other guys are all going to be finishing up then as well. And you know, like, what would it kind of mean to you then again, like, to kind of, you know, at least have a win and send off at the RDS as well?
Yeah, I want the team to do well.
Yeah.
Like, desperately want the team to do well. If they do really well, if we perform really, really well, I'll probably be happy that I was part of something.
Yeah.
Last week, like I said, driving up St. James's Gate into the stadium and seeing the level of support.
Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah.
Like, something in the minds of the supporters, the lads have created that. You know, they've given them big moments throughout the season that people decided to come over, you know, 20,000, 25,000 people decided to come over and be there when we're driving into the stadium. That was a huge, for me, that was a big moment. I think when the players play the game, it's them, and I'm there with them, and it's very much, I hope they win, I want them to win. But you're so ingrained in the performance side of things. I want us to perform for the supporters, because we've obviously created something in the minds of supporters, and I'm proud that I played some part in that over the last number of years. So either way, I'm really, really proud of my time in Leinster. I hope we put in a hell of a performance the weekend, and I want to win. We all want to win, so
yeah,
it's going to be a cracker. I think it's going to be an epic game, you know.
Yeah, it should be. Okay, yeah, well, listen, hopefully, actually, I will say hopefully, because I am from Leinster as well. Hopefully it goes
good
well.
On you. Thank you very
much. Wind the lads up. Yeah, cheers for that.
Cheers.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.